It's Wednesday, April 21st. George Floyd's daughter said her daddy changed the world. Well, a jury agrees. We start here.
Members of the jury, I understand you have a verdict.
The case that sparked some of the biggest protests in American history has ended.
There were so many nerves in that room.
Quickly, decisively, and unanimously, 12 jurors say what America saw on video was a murder.
Where in the universe have I ever seen a case like this? Never.
Today, we'll walk you through the verdicts, the reactions, the takeaways from the trial.
Will there be change? Probably. Will it be quick? Probably not.
And ask whether this is a defining moment in American race relations. From ABC News, this is a special edition of Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Jury selection began more than a month ago. The trial went for exactly 3 weeks. 44 witnesses were called. 3 fairly intricate charges were all up for debate. So, we would not have been shocked to see deliberations in the case of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin go for several days. Many attorneys were expecting difficulties in reaching unanimous verdict. A hung jury seemed like a distinct possibility.
And we're coming on the air with breaking news. We've just learned the jury has reached a verdict in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin charged in the death of George Floyd.
Well, yesterday afternoon, after barely 10 hours of deliberation, 12 people told a judge and the world, we've come to an agreement.
The verdict coming in late this afternoon from Minneapolis, former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin found guilty on all 3 charges in the death of George Floyd nearly a year ago.
What happened next changed several lives forever. It galvanized cities. It sparked conversations about where police reform goes next. We're going to spend the show today talking about what the death of George Floyd means now after guilty verdicts on all 3 counts against Chauvin. But if you want to talk about people with skin in the game, no one was more invested in this case than the family of George Floyd. And one of our reporters actually spent the day among those family members. Let's start the day with ABC's Stephanie Wash. She joins us from Minneapolis. Stephanie, I emailed you yesterday, asked, how's it going? You're covering the case. You said, I'm in the room with the family right now. How did this play out from their eyes?
Yeah, Brad, I don't think the family knew when to expect a verdict. We had actually made plans to do an interview yesterday evening with the family members and Benjamin Crump. And then when we learned that there had been a verdict, all of those plans went away and we immediately went into the mode of, let's hear what the jury has to say.
We know that George Floyd's family is on the way to a downtown hotel. Well, they will be watching this verdict inside a room. We are told.
And so I rushed over to the hotel where I knew the family was staying and, went over with them to the hotel where they would read the verdict. And the brothers of George Floyd, his nephew, his close cousins, his aunt, they were all in the room as this verdict was being read.
Obviously, if it's a not guilty verdict, that's what this city is bracing for, because they are expecting violence. They are expecting some kind of type of anarchy and chaos.
And before the verdict was even read, Brad, there were so many nerves in that room. I can't even really describe the energy in that room with words. His brother, Terrence Floyd, was actually in the barber's chair getting a haircut when he got the news that a verdict had been reached in this case. And he was telling me that he could actually feel something in his stomach.
Also, just then, we understand that Derek Chauvin has entered the courtroom, has entered the courthouse.
It felt like a very long period of waiting in that room for the judge to actually appear on the giant projector screen.
All rise for the jury.
And when the judge finally appeared on the screen, everybody in that room rushed to the screen. You have to remember, this is a moment in history for the nation, but imagine what a moment it is in history for the family that's living it.
Members of the jury, I understand you have a verdict.
The judge comes in and he begins to read the verdict.
Count one.
Court file number 27, CR20.
It was silent. And the moment that you heard the first guilty.
Unintentional second degree murder while committing a felony, find the defendant guilty.
It was a moment of joy. People were literally jumping for joy. People were off their feet in the air. Hmm. People were screaming. People were crying. Family members were embracing.
Same caption, verdict count two.
And then you heard the room go quiet because there were other verdicts to be read. And there were three charges to be read.
Second degree manslaughter, culpable negligence, creating an unreasonable risk. Find the defendant guilty.
And you heard guilty on all three of those charges. And at every moment that you heard the word guilty, there was celebration in that room.
It's kind of interesting, because I was wondering what it would be like. Because I was wondering, I could also imagine it being this quiet, reflective moment. Because like none of the, and they've said throughout this, this does not bring him back. And yet, like you said, there was just this burst of energy from this family that has lost so much.
Brad, I met George Floyd's family back in early June. I spend quite a bit of time with them in Minneapolis away from the cameras. And I know for a fact that George Floyd's family would rather have George Perry, as they call them, Floyd back. But what George Floyd's family got here, they absolutely needed that. I think that they would have been broken without it. Benjamin Crump and Philonis Floyd were actually at the court to hear the verdict be read. When they actually returned back to the hotel into this room where the rest of the family and the other attorneys were gathered, they came back with just this victorious spirit.
Well, feeling better now. Nothing is going to make it all better, but at least God, now there's some justice.
And Brad, at one point, President Biden actually called Ben Crump and the family on the phone.
Hopefully this is the momentum for the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act to get passed to have you sign.
Got it, pal. That and a lot more.
And they got to have a discussion.
When we do it, we're going to put you on Air Force One and get you.
We're going to hold you to that, President Biden.
After we left that press conference, I got to spend some time with George Floyd's brother, Terrence. And there was a moment where he was sitting down and things were silent. And I looked at him and I said, I think now you're really just finally starting to take it in. And he looked like he was in shock. He was finally realizing what had happened. So I think this family, now that a verdict's been reached, now that we've had some sort of resolution, we still, of course, have to wait for sentencing. I think that this family now is going to go into a period of mourning that they may have escaped because they have been so knee deep in getting the word out and being in front of the media. I think
the,
now
the fight is not the thing at this moment, finally.
Yeah.
Man, it's I feel relieved today that I finally have the opportunity to for hopefully getting some sleep. A lot of days that I prayed and I hoped and I was speaking everything into existence. I said I have faith that he will be convicted.
I think that the family now is going to be focused on healing. They're finally going to have this moment of silence and being with themselves to focus on what has happened to their family and how to move forward from here.
And to think that you thought you'd spend the day kind of talking to them about what the jurors are deliberating about, and all of a sudden there's this life-changing moment in front of everyone. Stephanie Wash, great perspective. Thank you.
Great to be with you, Brad.
So that's what happened. Let's get some perspective on why it happened. Shauna Lloyd is an attorney with the Cochran Group in Florida. She's also an ABC News contributor. And Shauna, as you look back at this trial now, this quick verdict, why was Derek Chauvin convicted?
I think that the jury went in, and usually their first question in criminal cases is, how many people believe that they're innocent or guilty? You know, and that starts the debate. Then they move to the charges. Then they move to the, you know, the different nuanced things that each charge will have. Clearly, this jury came in and said, from the break, we all agree he's guilty. Let's break down the charges. And then it seems that there was definitely some thought about the individual charges and then addressing those. So I think that's why we saw a quicker than usual verdict in this particular case.
In this case, there were no questions from the jury, no confusion over the charges, no notes sent to the judge, a relatively short amount of time to deliberate.
Were you surprised, by the way? I feel like everyone was kind of taken off guard by how quickly this verdict came in. It's a diverse jury. Everyone in America has got thoughts about the case, and these ones all happen to be unanimous.
I was actually very surprised. I didn't anticipate getting a verdict back really before Thursday. Early Thursday kind of was what I was anticipating. So this is earlier than even I expected it, because jurors do take that charge very seriously. They want to make sure that they are listening to each other, and they really do try to work through the charges. So I think that this just shows that the state clearly proved its case well. The fact that 12 different people walked into that room already on the same page, I think that's a significant factor here in how this jury came back that quickly.
You will learn what happened in that 9 minutes and 29 seconds, the most important numbers you will hear in this trial at 9:29.
It had everything it needed to put together this case. I mean, think about just the bystanders that were there.
In your experience, you felt something was wrong here that a sergeant needed to know about.
Correct. If this was a form of use of force, I was calling to let them know.
We had a 911 dispatcher. We had an EMT. We had a child. We had an MMA fighter. I mean, you know, where in the universe have I ever seen a case like this? Never.
Tell us what happened after you saw the ambulance come.
The ambulance had to push him off of him.
And what did his condition appear to be to you overall?
In lay terms, I thought he was dead.
And then we had all of the law enforcement come through to testify to the same thing.
Have you ever, in all the years you've been working for the Minneapolis Police Department, been trained to kneel on the neck of someone who is handcuffed behind their back in a prone position?
No, I haven't. If your knee is on a person's neck, that can kill him.
So I think that the state definitely had all of the elements that a juror is going to be looking at. They had a case that was very solid because they were able to address the few things that the defense could have looked towards to, you know, create that reasonable doubt.
What happens next? I mean, Derek Chauvin went from being a police officer, a former police officer out on bail facing charges, to he's in custody right now. Right? He's essentially an inmate. What happens next?
There's going to be a lot that's going to happen. First, we have to get through sentencing. The state has asked for an upward departure. So what you're going to see is their arguments and the briefs regarding why they feel like this is applicable. They're going to talk about things about the fact that in his position when he committed this crime, he was in a position of trust. He was in a position of authority. They're going to talk about the fact that this was a crime that was perpetrated in front of a child. So it will be the judge that determines that and how much upwards we're looking at. The max is 40.
You're saying they could ask for more time specifically because they're saying he murdered someone in front of a child. Like that should be sentenced higher.
Yes, correct. Because the max is 40, right? So they have the ability to get up until 40. You know, realistically, with this judge, I would be very surprised if a 40 was imposed. I think you will see an upward departure, but I don't think it'll be that high as the maximum.
Or is an appeal a possibility here? Like, what are we about to see from Chauvin's team?
Absolutely. I think that they're going to go from the amount of public pressure on this jury. You know, what you're looking at on these appeals, and he is absolutely going to appeal, is anything that would have been a mistake of law.
This jury has, despite all best efforts, has been bombarded with information relevant to this case. It is impossible to stay away from it unless you literally shut off your phone, you shut off your TV, you shut off your computer, and no such instructions have been given during the course of this trial.
Well, to be fair, the last few times I've advised them, I told them, don't watch the news. Pure and simple.
Right, but if you can't even watch your favorite Thursday night television program and it comes up, I mean, this is the problem. Right.
So, for instance, if the judge should have sequestered the jury and that can be shown to impact this verdict, then he can win an appeal and we'll be looking at a new trial. So that's a very real thing that is going to happen. We should expect it, especially in a trial of this magnitude.
Representative Maxine Waters making these comments about the trial.
I hope that we are going to get a verdict that is say guilty, guilty, guilty. And if we don't, we cannot go away.
United States congressperson was making what I interpreted to be, and what I think are reasonably interpreted to be, threats against the sanctity of the jury process.
You had elected officials that weighed in and said, you know, something to this effect, and they were talking about how their feelings and what should happen and what type of verdict should be expected.
I wish elected officials would stop talking about this case, especially in a manner that is disrespectful to the rule of law and to the judicial branch and our function.
The judge was very clear that that was something that could be grounds for appeal. So I think that you're going to see those type of arguments waged in his appeal when it's filed.
All right. Shauna Lloyd with lots of trial experience. Thanks for sharing some of that with us, Shauna.
Thank you so much for having me.
Next up on Start Here, this case went way beyond the courtroom, the effect on Minneapolis and the rest of the country after the break. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November, and while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know, something I noticed was that just 10 minutes after we learned the jury had a verdict, as we were waiting for it, you could already hear helicopters in the air overhead where I live in New York City. Authorities were getting ready for whatever that verdict could be and what kind of reaction it would get.
That's right. So many collectively holding their breath here. David, you can perhaps hear the helicopters above. I know that we just saw the crowds outside of Cub Foods at 38th in Chicago, but just to kind of see...
At the same time in Minnesota, if you were listening to our team on the ground there, you could quickly hear helicopters begin to circle there as well. And these ones... we're prepared to circle neighborhoods all night long. Let's go to ABC's Alex Perez, who has been living and breathing this case for almost a year now. Alex, what has it been like in Minneapolis since this verdict was read?
Well, Brett, you know, this city has been bracing for this moment, not for weeks, but for months, essentially, since this trial date was set. And yes, we can hear those helicopters that you mentioned. If you walked down the street, you're very likely going to run into some members of the National Guard. Some 2,000 of them were deployed across this city, and they were really everywhere. It was quite the sight to see across the city of Minneapolis.
Look at all this media.
So in that hour's worth of time, people came out of their homes. People started to fill the streets. And we saw that sort of in different neighborhoods, in different areas.
He's guilty!
And what we saw in a lot of these places was jubilation. People hugging, kissing. A lot of tears, a lot of emotion.
Thank you, Father God! Thank you,
And, you know, while on the surface, I think that looks like a celebration, it looks like happiness, it's just from talking to so many of these people over the last year who have taken to the streets to demonstrate, I wouldn't describe it as a celebration. I really think it was more a sense of relief.
There's always that sort of feeling that the world won't love your loved one like you did, that justice might not have been served. But when we got the verdict, it was incredibly gratifying to know that the murder that we all witnessed with our own eyes would be deemed as such and judged as such.
As many people told me, they felt after watching that video that George Floyd was like a family member that they lost, and they did not want him to die in vain.
Black lives, they matter. Black lives, they matter. They need to matter.
That's interesting you put it that way, Alex, because I do think that this case was divisive. Anything about race and policing in this country is going to be divisive. And I was wondering if these scenes that you were talking about that looked very much like celebrations would be seen as divisive in and of themselves. But it sounds like you're saying, no, it's more nuanced than that.
I think this also, you know, really sort of put a spotlight on neighborhoods like South Minneapolis.
People who stopped and raised their voices on May 25th, 2020, were a bouquet of humanity.
And there are neighborhoods like this one across the country, and there are good people in those neighborhoods who do good and honorable things.
A man from the neighborhood just walking to get a drink. A child going to buy a snack with her cousin. An off-duty firefighter on her way to a community garden, brave young women, teenagers, who press record on their cell phones. Why did they stop? They didn't know George Floyd.
We saw a lot of those people take the witness stand, and in many ways, this is a win for those people who, you know, want to group certain people or assume that everyone is a certain way because they live in a certain zip code.
They didn't need to be medical professionals or experts in the use of force. They knew it was wrong, and they were right.
There are good and bad people everywhere, and we saw a lot of good people come forward, and they're shining right now because they spoke up for something they believed in.
Right. It's a good point, because when you look just a little bit north in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, authorities have noted that none of the police officers on the force there, including the ones that were involved in the shooting of Dante Wright, actually lived in the community that they were policing. Alex Perez, they're on the ground in Minneapolis. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
The spot where George Floyd was killed was at East 38th Street and Chicago Avenue in Minneapolis. That is now known as George Floyd Square. I think yesterday showed that it will always be named George Floyd Square. But in many ways, this killing, this murder, was also why there is a Black Lives Matter plaza in Washington, D.C. George Floyd's death is the reason a permanent mural is now emblazoned on Hollywood Boulevard after what became the largest set of protest marches in our nation's history. There's a Black Lives Matter park in Albany, New York. This went much further than Minnesota. So let's close the show now with ABC's Byron Pitts. He's the co-anchor of Nightline. Byron, I was thinking, this was certainly not the first trial of a police officer who killed an unarmed black man. This is not even the first conviction, but this felt different. Why?
But I think, in many reasons, for the same reasons why Emmett Till's death in 1955 felt different. It wasn't the first time a black child, a black male had died in the hands of an angry white mob. But Emmett Till changed America because it was one of those instances where much of America saw the same thing and had the same reaction. And that's what we see with the George Floyd case, that there have been other instances where people of color have died in the hands of law enforcement, been injured in the hands of law enforcement, and there's been video of it. But this time, for some reason, for a variety of reasons, much of America saw the same image, had the same reaction. And this time, a diverse American jury believed their eyes.
But I guess to that exact point, like you said, we saw Rodney King beaten 30 years ago in front of our eyes. Those police officers got acquitted.
Yeah, and I think that's just it's just one of those things in American history that we may never be able to fully understand. What was it this time that connected with people?
It was sacrificial blood that made this moment possible for history in America.
For many people in 1955, they say it was the nature of their brutality forced upon this child. This time, people say, because you see George Floyd on the ground and he seems defenseless for 9+ minutes, and this officer very casually has his knee in his neck, his hands in his pocket, as if to say, it's only Monday. And that struck a chord across America, across the globe.
I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Those are George Floyd's last words. We can't let those words die with him.
And Brett, I think one of the unique things about this case, for one of the few times in our nation's history, that blue wall we talk about so often, that blue wall disappeared.
I agree that the defendant violated our policy in terms of rendering aid.
You saw the police chief. You saw officer after officer take the stand and say, what Derek Chauvin did isn't what good cops do. That's significant.
What happened when a Columbus police officer shot and killed a teen girl on the far southeast side this afternoon?
We just celebrated a guilty verdict that was good for the nation, good for global society at large, simultaneously taking that hope and just crushed it right in the city we're fighting for.
Well, and there are still, even this year, this in the last week, there are more cases resembling this, not exactly like this, but in the same vein, unfolding as we speak. So from police to criminal justice to where Americans stand, does this moment change anything?
To me, that is the bigger question that comes out of this verdict in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Look, history has shown us that winning the war is sweet, but winning the peace is often difficult, often takes much longer. Certainly, this particular case involving these particular circumstances had a verdict that many people in this country will applaud. But moving forward, does this change things dramatically? Certainly, I would imagine it changes how the Minneapolis Police Department will conduct its business. So I think this verdict sends a very specific message to law enforcement as to how the public will view them and how they should view themselves. But does this mean that miraculously that in the days to come that black men will be treated dramatically different by law enforcement? Probably not. If you look at the history of the civil rights movement, for every major achievement, there were always setbacks and change occurred slowly. One final example, Emmett Till was killed in 1955. The Voting Rights Act didn't pass until 1965, 10 years later. So will there be change? Probably. Will it be quick? Probably not.
And I think it was our colleague Steve Osunsami who said yesterday, you know, he remembers telling teachers, authorities, things that had happened to him, injustices, and the only thing those people had to believe was the word of a young black man. He said, the difference is now the thing you carry around in your pocket every day. Byron Pitts, giving us perspective really over the last year. Thank you so much.
Always good to be with you, my friend.
That'll do it for us on what has really been a momentous 24 hours. We will keep you up to date with all the news a day on our Twitter page at StartHereABC. If this is your first time listening to the show, hit subscribe. We will be with you every morning. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
every day right after the show while the topics are still hot. The ladies go deeper into the moments that make The View, The View.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The View's Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.